Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Tennis Connected Studios for January 11th, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to bring you our Australian Open preview. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. For anybody who's down under this week or, you know, looking to check out any other tournaments for the rest of the year in terms of the majors, make sure to hit them up for all your ticket and traveling needs. And let's introduce Parsa. How are you, my friend? Welcome back.
I'm doing great. How are you? Happy New Year.
Very good, man. It's been, a little bit of time off. We've been chilling, getting ready, and, you know, the first major of the year starts in a couple days, which is fantastic. Let's get right into it, Parsa. We had some sad news yesterday from the tennis world. One of the, you know, the big four, one of the elite players on the ATP Tour, Andy Murray, is set to retire potentially after the Australian Open, if not later this year at his beloved Wimbledon. So we got to spend a little bit of time on this before we get into our draw previews and break those down. What do you think about this news? And how do you think this is going to impact the tennis world as a whole? And just if you could summarize, you know, your thoughts and your emotions as you heard Murray, talk about what's going on with him.
Yeah, well, first thing, an incredible champion. Yes. The guy is one of the elite competitors we're ever going to see in history and a big fighter. And I'm going to explain to you why. He came in an era of incredible talent and incredible players in Nadal and Federer. And Djokovic, to be honest, and he wasn't those guys. He's got great feel, he's got great conditioning, and all those a great mind to boot. But he had to push himself to a level that he didn't even know existed, and he had to work so hard day in and day out to make up for the talent gap. And he did it, you know, and he should be very proud of it. I'm sure he is very proud of it. I'm sure he's very, you know, disappointed and emotional about it because, you know, it's not a financial thing. It's a love of the sport, a love to compete at that level. You get addicted to those types of battles, those moments, the crowds, the cheering, the 5 hour plus matches where you're just ruthlessly, you know, putting your body against another man who's trained and put himself in a position to be there as well and to come out on top. It's an adrenaline rush that he'll never feel again. And I think that was his motivation trying to come back. And, you know, the guy can barely walk, as he said, and it's just not fun. You know, he can get himself to go, but it's with a ton of sacrifice. And, you know, it's a career that needs to be, you know, cherished and applauded and a mind that is brilliant. And he's got a lot more to offer to the sport. And, but there is a price to pay. And he's clearly paid that price. You know what I mean?
Yes, but I think, you know, when the dust settles and the emotions are over and he obviously gets over the fact that he couldn't end his career on his own terms and he'll sit back one day wherever he is around the world and he's going to say, listen, man, the decisions that I made in at the end of 2016, where we just talked about this before we got on air, where he completely emptied the bucket, played 5 tournaments in a row, won all of them to, you know, become the number one ranked player in the world. I mean, that was crazy, but he did it and he won everything and he beat Djokovic. He beat every, you know, he did what he needed to do and he got his number one ranking. He's won 3 majors. He's won Olympic gold. He's won Davis Cup, you know, numerous Masters 1000s. And like you said, I mean, this guy is in an era where how many Grand Slams do Djokovic, Nadal and Federer have? I think 55, something like a crazy amount. Like, and this is like, obviously, look at what you're up against, you know, and there hasn't been any other player that's been able to get more than 3 majors in this era, right? It's him, Wawrinka, you know, Delpo's got one, Cilic has got one, not much else has happened. And it's just like these guys have dominated, and he's kind of, you know, slipped through the cracks and got, you know, did what he had to do. And it's just a testament to him. It's just a testament to working hard. Obviously, the guy's got great hands. He's got an amazing backhand and all of the stuff. But he's just got himself in tip-top shape, ran everything down. And because his game is predicated on his movement, obviously, you know, the curtain is about to, you know, set because he can't move anymore. And we wish him all the best. He's got a super tough first rounder against Roberto Bautista Agut, as we'll talk about in a bit. But, you know, Parse, I take my hat off to this guy, man. I mean, you know, one of my lasting memories is that I remember watching him at the Rogers Cup way back in the day. This is when he was still with Fred Perry. And he was playing Carlos Moya in an early rounder, and he beat Moya. And at the net, he was like, you know what, man, listen, it was a real privilege to play against you today. You know, you're one of my heroes, one of the guys that I looked up to while I was growing up. And, you know, Moya talked about that after, like, this guy's got so much respect for people. He knows the history of the sport. And, you know, Murray alluded to that as well, too. But this is the type of guy that he is, kind of in that Federer mode and, you know, just really loves the sport and appreciates, you know, both the men's and women's tours. He's been very vocal and supportive of the WTA, which has been awesome. And he's going to be missed, but I think you'll see him around. I think he loves the sport too much to just, you know, go and hide off, kind of like a Pete Sampras, and not really, really do much. I think you're going to see him around the circuit, and, you know, we wish him all the best as, you know, he wraps up the next few months. Any closing words on that before we move into the draws?
No, just a, you know, a phenomenal career, and just hats off to him. And you know, you always love to see warriors go out on their own terms, but you know, this particular warrior had to go so hard that he burned it out. And that happens, man. Sometimes, you know, that's what's amazing about Federer. He's avoided it. and, you know, Nadal is takes, you know, half the year off basically now. And Serena Williams, the same thing. So that's what's necessary. And, you know, hats off to him. And we will miss him, though. You know, we'll miss his antics. We'll miss his being a nuisance to these top guys and making them all better. So I hope that they all applaud a champion who's now going off into the sunset, and I hope they appreciate it, because and I'm sure they will, because they're classy individuals. It's an era has come, and an era has now ended, and not an era, I guess, a career here, and it's probably the first one of the next couple that we have left.
Exactly, and you can just see that it's gonna, I think, gonna be a little bit of that domino effect, Parsa, where you're gonna see this, and then maybe, maybe Nadal, and then Fed, and then probably Joker will be the last one, just because he's, you know, still really fresh and ready to go. Okay, so let's get right into the first major of 2019. Very exciting. Let's start with the women's part. So we have Simona Halep as the number one seed, made the finals here last year, unsponsored, lost to Wozniacki. She, you know, she fires it off against Kaya Kanepi in the first round. It's going to be, I think, a tough one for her, but I mean, this is a loaded section, Parsa. You got Halep, you got Venus, you got Bouchard, who's starting to make a little bit of a comeback, as I started to say that, and then you got Serena Williams. But I mean, for me, I really like what I'm seeing from Serena. I mean, she's been hitting the ball really well. I've watched a lot of her practice sessions, and I think she's fresh. I think she's got a lot to prove this year, man. I think she's coming in. She's 16 ranked, and I think she's going to, you know, create a lot of havoc for a lot of players here. I'm going Serena all the way to the semifinals here. Do you have anybody else that you're looking for in this section, or are we on the same page on that one?
Serena Williams. I mean, is she trustworthy, Nima?
I think so. I mean, she's been, you know, she's, I think
she's... Did you watch her at Hopman Cup at all?
Yeah, she looked like she was having fun. I mean, she never, I don't think, you know, Murray said something really good. I don't know if you saw it. It was like a 2-minute video. This was for the Australian Open interview. It wasn't his press conference. And he said, I'm the type of guy that, you know, when I have a lot of pressure on me, I play better. Now I don't have a lot of pressure on me because I know I can't maximize what I want to do in my mind. Right? And I think Serena Williams is the same way. At the end of the day, like a LeBron or a Jordan, like these super elite level, next level players, which Serena, I think you can put in with the greatest of all time for anything. I think she really thrives under that pressure. In the Hopman Cup, it's just about hitting some balls. getting some feel, feeling it, you know what I mean? Playing against, obviously, you know, some good competition. And I think that she comes in here with a lot to prove. And how can you bet against her? I mean, she made the U.S. Open Finals, made Wimbledon Finals, playing pretty good, but I don't think she was playing at the top level. And I think that's I think she's ready to go now. She looks like she's in good shape. She looks like she's much fitter than she was back then. And I think her number one obstacle in getting to the finals here is going to be her opponent, you know, in the U.S. Open final, which was Naomi Osaka. I think she's also going to make the semifinals, but I like Serena to get through to make the finals. What do you have in this top section here? Anything else really stand out to you in terms of players?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some interesting matchups, you know. But for me, you know, I agree with you. Serena Williams is I don't know if she's the player to beat. I think if she beats Halep, I think it'll be like one of those screamy, you know, type matches where it's like, come on, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it could be dramatic, and I think it could be awesome. So, you know, it's just very hard, you know, betting against Serena in that, you know, if she's in, you'll know by the first or second round if she's in top form, she's going to win the tournament or not. And,
yes.
You know, it's just a tough sell. And she does look fitter, but I still don't see her in tip-top shape.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's happened the last couple of weeks. You know, I'm sure she's continuing to practice and improve. But, besides that, I mean, there's interesting matchups, but I don't think anyone's of that class. It's just Halep that's in the way, and Halep's got her own work cut out for her. She's going to have to do quite a bit, and a best Halep versus a best Serena, it's a best Serena all the time, so...
Yeah, I would 100% agree with you. So I just want to say something because it's really important. I listened to, you know, Chris Evert do an interview, her presser before the event. She was talking to some media and they asked her, like, what do you think about this year and all this? And she said, listen, the last 8 majors have been won by 8 different women, right? How do you want me to pick who's going to win this? Anybody can win this tournament. So it's such a hard thing for us to do. In a way, it's great. If you're looking for consistency, you're not going to get that with the WTA because there's so many possibilities. It's literally like a lottery. Anything can happen. But in saying that, I think, you know, Canada might have, Parsa, another rising star here. And the name that I'm going to bring forward right now is Bianca Andreescu, who made the finals of Auckland, played really well. And she looks like she's got a pretty decent draw. Have you, you know, studied her game? I don't know if you came across her in the juniors when she was playing with all the stuff that you've done, you know, in Long Island with your players at any of these big events that you're going to, the junior events. I don't know if you came across her at any point, but...
I'm actually not familiar. I mean, I know her results and things like that, but yeah. I haven't actually seen her play a match.
Yeah, she's, I mean, hitting a very big ball, very strong, very mature. And I think she's going to do well. I mean, she qualified. Her opponent in the last round of qualies withdrew, retired in the second set. So looks like she's going to be able to save some gas. She obviously had the good result last week. So I think she's one of those players to watch here. And I definitely think she can do some damage. So as we move now to the bottom half, we have Svitolina, who, again, is still in search of that elusive, you know, big-time Grand Slam result. Fit. You know, she's lost some weight. She's right there. Not that she was ever not in shape, but she's in a position right now, I think, to really do, you know, some good stuff. And, I mean, I think we should definitely, you know, watch out for her as she moves forward. But I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts on this second section? I mean, Kerber is definitely lurking here for me. I think, you know, she plays really well here. We have Sharapova. You know, Parsa, I definitely think Sharapova's done. I mean, that's honestly, I can say that with confidence. I think there's a lot of shoulder problems that she's leading on. But again, like in Andy Murray, irrespective of all of the, you know, millions of dollars that she has in her bank account, she loves to compete. She thrives off of that. It's the adrenaline. It's the, you know, everything that she gets from being on that center court and having all of the fans cheer for her. And I definitely think that it's obviously, you know, one to watch. But I think that if this is not her last year, I would be very surprised. That's honestly my opinion. What do you think about Sharapova and how she fares as this tournament progresses?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't even know how much of a talking point she is anymore. Does anyone really care that much? I mean, it's, you know, Sharapova is you know, after her suspension for illegal use of performance enhancers or whatever it is, she clearly isn't the same. So whether they are performance enhancers or not, she's just not the same player for whatever reason, whether it's a mental thing or a physical thing. Yeah, I mean, it's really a non-conversation for me. I think she is absolutely done. She's too, you know, one-dimensional in her footwork, although cleaned up and has been much better as of the last 3-4 years. It came too late in her career, and so she didn't get to reap the benefits of having that great footwork. So, yeah, that's about it there.
So for me right now, when I look at actually, I'm just going to make a quick thing here because I had somebody in the wrong position, but I'm going to go with, you know, Sabalenka, definitely one to watch. I think she's just the next, you know, wave of what, you know, a professional woman's player needs to be like. Very strong, very physical, hits the absolute heck out of the ball, a la Serena, maybe even stronger. I don't know if that's even possible, but I think she's, you know, almost there. I think she's really due to continue, you know, her great end of the season last year, and I think she won a tournament to begin this year. So I'm taking her to make the semis, as well as Kerber, and I'm going to take, actually, Sabalenka to make the finals opposite Serena, but I'm taking Serena to win this tournament. What do you have?
Yeah, so in the bottom half, I'm going to have a Kerber-Williams final. Here's the reason why.
Yes.
I think Kerber, so we talk about emotions and things like that, and we know her level is of a class level or of a top class level, but her mental game has been a little bit, you know, choppy through the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years. It's either amazing or non-existent. And I think this second go-round where she's steadily been having good, steady results, I think is a result of her finally mastering her emotions. And so I think we're going to see something great from Kerber this year. And I think we're going to get both of them deep in the draw there. And I'm going to have Williams and Kerber. And I think it's not going to be easy. But I think I'm going to have Kerber holding the trophy and not allowing and denying Serena once again.
All right. Very, very good. As we move on to the men's draw, again, you know, could be a lot of compelling storylines. We have Novak Djokovic going for his third major. I mean, basically on his back last year at Indian Wells in Miami, contemplating if he's ever going to even compete again. Then he goes into the clay court season, loses to Cecinato in the, I believe, in the quarters, and then says, I'm probably not going to play on the grass. You know, Vida convinces him to do so. He goes and wins Wimbledon, you know, rolls through, wins the U.S. Open, finishes number one, and now in a great position to win, I believe, his 7th Australian Open title. He opens up against Mitchell Krueger, Parsa, and after that, it gets very interesting. I mean, he's got Tsonga, who's not the player that he was, but not a guy you want to play in the second round, and neither is Martin Kleizan, but obviously Tsonga is much more of a class player. Then we have Kokkinakis, who's qualified, beating the luckiest of losers, Peter Polanski, in the last round of qualies, and then he could potentially play Denis Shapovalov, who's looking to come in and do some damage here, show what his pedigree is at the even higher level. And then we got Daniel Medvedev, who for me, Parsa, is going to be a little bit like that Davidenko. He's also Russian, not a lot of fanfare around him, a much bigger, stronger guy who just absolutely can rock the ball, has a super live arm. I mean, watch out for this guy to do a lot of damage throughout the next 10 years, in my opinion, if he can keep his head on straight. Davidenko was much more level-headed. He was like cruising altitude, you know what I mean, his mentality. This guy's a little bit up and down, so that could definitely, you know, factor into how his career transpires. But I think, if you're asking me right now, he's going to be very dangerous here. Still, with all of that said, how can you not go with Djokovic to get through to the quarters here? I mean, I don't know how you can do that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to pick against Djokovic right now in anything. He's a next-level competitor, a next-level ball striker, a next-level tactician. And, you know, he's got Vida on his side. I think there's a very strong case that he's going to get to the quarter, albeit not easy, as you've mentioned. And, you know, I think there's going to be some possible difficult sets.
Yes.
but I definitely see him getting into the quarter.
So we got a very interesting matchup that I know everybody is going to be like, okay, I know you guys were going to talk about it. We got Milos Raonic, our Canadian boy, versus bad boy Nick Kyrgios, who continues to, you know, make us believe that he really doesn't care about the sport, even though he's got a signature shoe with Kyrie Irving that he's going to debut against Raonic in round one. What do you think about this match, Parsa? I mean, obviously, two massive servers. They've pretty much, you know, played each other very close, but Kyrgios has beat him in some big matches, same with Milos. I don't know. I mean, this one, for me, is definitely a 50-50. I don't care if Kyrgios cares or he doesn't care. His serve is just unbelievable, and so is Raonic's. So what's going to be the, you know, the deciding factor here, and how do you see this one playing out?
I think the deciding factor is going to be the X factor, and if you go by the X factor, it's all Kyrgios. So I think that he can make, in when they do get into rallies, I think he's the one who's going to be able to make something out of nothing and earn some break points and opportunities for himself. You know, I think that's pretty clear, right?
Yeah, and I think that he's going to, I think so. And then if that does take place, then we got a very interesting potential second round match against Stan Wawrinka. And nobody's ever going to forget their history. I mean, Gobis stands in the way of potentially that happening. But yeah, I mean, that could definitely work out for me. But still, I'm completely off that Kyrgios train, Parsa, for 2019. He's got to prove it. He's got to prove it to me. I mean, you know how big I've been on this guy throughout the last few years. And ever since he won those challengers in Sarasota back in the day, I don't know, 14, 13, whatever it was. And I was bigging him up since then. I mean, the guy's, he's a clown at this point for me. I mean, you know, I love the guy and I think he's super entertaining and I watch his matches, but he's really got to step it up, man, because he's just been out to lunch and there's only so, and it's amazing because he respects Andy Murray so much, and you watch a guy like Andy Murray, literally, I mean, a grown man who's a multi-millionaire, Grand Slam champion, crying in a press conference because he knows he can't play tennis anymore. You got a guy like Kyrgios, relatively, if you wanted to, he's got even way more talent than Murray. Super talented guy, you know, only 23 years old, and he's completely wasting everything that he has. So it's, but he still looks up to Murray, which is, to me, such an interesting thing, right? Like, if you think about it, if you want to really break it down. But with all of that said, I look at this, you know, this half and who's going to be opposite Djokovic, and I got to go with my man Dominic Thiem. Even though he hasn't started off the year too well, I think that he proved at the U.S. Open that he can play some good ball. This is also a very slow hard court. I think he's going to munch on a lot of these guys in the early rounds, although, you know, Pair is not an easy out. You know, Zverev has played well here in the past. You got Lucas Pouille, who's, you know, much lower ranked than he should be at this point. You know, Chorich, who's been playing some good ball. But I like what I'm seeing from Thiem, and I have him all the way to the semis. How about you?
So you have who in, going into the semis?
I got Djokovic versus Thiem.
The guy's earning your respect, huh?
Yeah. I got Thiem finishing number three in the world this year, man. I gotta back him up for now, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The way he finished, you definitely think that it's very possible that can happen. I'm gonna go here with Djokovic, and I am gonna go with the hometown boy. I think he's gonna play Kyrgios in a ridiculous battle.
Yes.
Although I don't think it's going to be easy. You know, I Stan has been out there. I think he's sort of, that could be some sort of epic thing going on there in the second round. Yeah, maybe now. See, that just threw me off. But yeah, I think that if I could have my way, I'd do a Kyrgios Djokovic semifinal.
Yeah, that would be incredible. But I really don't think it's going to happen. Okay, Parsa, as we're getting closer to winding it down for this week, we go into our second half, which is led by finalists of last year, Cilic against Tomic. We got, you know, other guys like Rublev. We have that Bautista Agut versus Murray. I really hope that's not painful for Murray's sake. We have Tennis Sandgren, who's playing in the final today. See how he does. Can we really go at this point against Federer? I mean, like, what he's playing against Istomin starting off. He's got Daniel Evans or Fritz coming up after that. We got Monfils, a couple other guys. I mean, is it time for Federer to lose in the first or second round? Or is he still good for the quarters? I mean, is he still that good? Two-time defending champion, Parsa. What do you think?
I think he's definitely still that good.
Okay. So, you know, that settles that. I think so too, man. I think the guy is just so talented. And I saw him practicing with Edmund, with Dimitrov. I mean, the guy is hitting the ball clean. He's looking really good. It's amazing, eh? He's 37 and some change and just feeling good. And, you know, it's just... And I think you're going to see him for this year. I definitely think he's done after 2020. I think he plays two more years and that's going to be it. But we will enjoy what we have left of this incredible champion. I think we should definitely look out for Karen Khachanov as well. Number 10, you know, he had an amazing end to last year. But I'm going Federal Express, FedEx, all the way to the semis. What do you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard. I mean, I debated picking him to win the tournament, let alone getting to the semis.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm definitely having Federer going through. I just, you know, there's nobody in his section here that's going to know what to do with him. And that's just the truth. He's just going to be on top of people and he's just not going to hold, he's going to hold the baseline, hold serve. And, you know, yes, like a John Millman can come out and give him some sort of physical match, you know, and maybe Cilic can, you know, cause issues. But I think it's a one-off, and I think that's a good quarterfinal matchup for him, and I think he'll get tested there for the first time. I have him going through that test into the semis.
Okay. And as we wind it down here, we got Rafa Nadal. Parsa has not played a tournament since the U.S. Open. However, there's a couple things, and I don't know if you've read this, Parsa. You know that he's completely revamped his serve, right? Did you read that whole article? Moya and Roy and Francisco Roy said that they've completely revamped his serve. Moya was some really cool stuff. You should check it out on the ATP site when you get a moment. They're talking about how his serve before would lose velocity as it would hit the court. Now it's still accelerating as it's coming off of the bounce. So they've fixed the arc on his left hand and just a lot of these different mechanical things. He's more upright. He's dropping his left hand a little bit quicker. I mean, lots of really, and they've tried it in test matches and they said he's ready to go. So, and because they said that, and this is a testament to, I love these guys, you know what I mean? Because this is a guy who's won, 17 majors, right? You know, and he's coming in at the age of 32, still looking to improve and tinker with things. And, you know, even a guy with OCD and everything that he's got, he's still ready to do it. And, I mean, look, man, if he's winning cheap points off of a serve and hitting the ball a bit flatter with as strong as he is, I think he can do really well here. I don't care if he hasn't played since the U.S. Open. And I think he really, and they were talking about that. And you know what prompted the change? His loss to Delpo in the semis. Even though he had to retire, he was getting tuned in the first two sets because he couldn't get a lot of free points off of his serve, right? And Del Potro obviously hits massive, especially on his forehand. And they were like, listen, especially, you know, with the age that Rafa is in and everything that goes into that, he's got to hit the ball bigger. And they know that he's not 18, 19, 25 anymore, right? So this is what it is. And you know, you said this a couple of years ago, man. Just serve big till your shoulder falls off. I mean, what do you have to lose at this point? You're 32. You're not playing till you're 37 because you're not Federer, right? So for me, definitely this is an amazing move, one that could definitely, you know, very well win him this tournament. And Parsa, I got to hold you to it because you said he's going to finish number one this year. So I think, yeah, so I mean, that's another interesting thing. So he opens up against Duckworth. He's got an amazing draw. I know you said he's got some grinders in his way, but still, if he's moving okay, I think he gets through these guys. I mean, that Opelka and Isner is just going to be something to see. I mean, look, you know, watch out. That's probably the tallest match ever, right? You got 2-6-10.
It's going to be the first one to test the super tiebreak at 9-0.
Yeah.
The regular tiebreak.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got Anderson and Mannarino in that first one. I think Anderson's another guy we got to watch out for here. But for me, I got Rafa all the way to face Fed in another Fidel, which is going to be amazing. Seems like they always get to do this down under, but never in New York, which is really sad for the NYC fans. But I got them facing off. I got Fed taking out Rafa in four sets. I got Joker taking out Team in four sets. And then I got Djokovic winning this event over Federer in four sets. What do you have?
So you have Djokovic over Federer in the final?
Yes.
So I've got a Fidal again, but this time I've got a Nadal Fidal victory on a hard court.
All right.
I do think Federer can win an event like this, but I do think he still needs help in order to do so. So that means the big guns have to be out of the way, and I don't believe in this particular draw that Nadal will be out of the way. And I think Federer's quarterfinal, albeit it may not be a name, I think will be start to get very challenging for him as his body fatigues. So I'm going to have Nadal going through, and in the top half, it's I think going to be a barn burner, but I'm going to have Djokovic there. And although I have Nadal as the number one at the year end, I think we're going to continue with our number one here. I think Novak is going to take this one and put another one under his belt.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Okay, Parsa, before we sign off for this week, just wanted to talk a little bit about getting back to Nick Kyrgios, but more about his recent collaboration with Nike and Kyrie Irving in that basketball-tennis crossover. And I think this is a really cool initiative because it's stuff that I'm really into from a cultural standpoint, you know, a streetwear standpoint. And I think that this is a great move by Nike because, I mean, it would be much better if Kyrgios was like a top five player, because then you would see him maybe do some Jordan collaborations and do some next level stuff. But I think, you know, with the Australian ties that, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kyrgios obviously have, I think it was a great move. And I think that, you know, basketball is such a popular sport in the States, you know, as well as worldwide, to be honest. I mean, the NBA is just, you know, crushing it right now. I think this is a fantastic move. And I think I hope at least it's one that really prompts Kyrgios to, if nothing else, to really kickstart his career. Because, I mean, the guy can just forget about tennis. I mean, he can just become this global icon if he really wants to. But, you know, I just want to hear, you know, a couple quick words on you, what you think about, you know, stuff like this taking place and what kind of impact it has. Because you got to also remember, right, if we can do more stuff like this, you know, through Nike, which is a major company, you're also going to get a new fan base, right? Because kids get into it, they're like, oh, that's a cool shoe, you know, I mean, I want to start watching tennis a little bit more and playing. And I think everybody overall benefits from that. So what are your closing words for this week on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's cool that Nike is bringing, you know, a mass audience, a different audience, I guess is the right word.
Yes.
And Kyrgios can do that. He has that charisma in order to do so. And he has that crossover effect, as I think people want to see what he has to do and to say. And I think he can bring people who haven't watched tennis before to the court, to, you know, and not only play but watch and support and become great fans and more appreciative of the athletics and what happens on the tennis court. I think it's a great thing. It's a very smart move by Nike. It's just too bad that the guy's sort of a bum. I say that with you know, the people who know me know what I mean. It's, I look at the reverse from everybody else. He's 99.9% better than the planet at playing tennis, but he's about, you know, points, you know, whatever it is, he's about 10% away from the best players in the world. And that's what I mean by a bum. Like, the guy's got a serious amount of talent, and he just needs that discipline to match that talent. And God knows he would be a global icon, but maybe he doesn't want it, you know. I don't know, whatever the story is.
Yes.
You know, it's great that he's able to have that crossover effect. I just wish that he could get to the semis here, you know, like I predicted. I think it could be a phenomenal thing, but I'm picking that literally because of his tennis. You know, so if Nike gets the benefit of that, then great. And I hope it happens. So
for sure. Okay, so with that being said, Parson and I will be back to wrap up this event in a couple weeks. In the meantime, make sure to check us out at Tennis Connected for, you know, your wall-to-wall coverage, from daily wrap-ups to previews to TV listings to live streaming to anything that you want to see. If you want to follow Parsa on Twitter or Instagram, it's at Parsa Sammy. Myself, it's on Mars. Parsa, thank you very much for joining us this week. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to also download this podcast on iTunes as well as on Android. Sleep is for the week, Parsa. Get ready for some hardy open action.
I can't wait. It's the time of night that I'm actually awake.
So take care, everyone, and we'll chat with you guys.